Ooh, nice juice.
Let's keep it a nice NC-17.
A nice. All right. So like, we're going to limit ourselves to at least, like, what, like, just two mentions of cum this episode?
Oh, that's... We can do more than that.
Okay, we could... There's always room for more cum, at least. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like...
There's the cold open.
There's the cold open, and then we got to warm it up.
Warm up the mic.
Warm up that mic. Yeah.
Don't put cum in the microwave.
No, don't put... I wonder what that would do, actually. I've never really thought of that. It's never a thought that's crossed my mind of just like, you know, is that a thing you could...
I'm pretty sure it would be.
I think I've thought about it. I don't remember the...
Somebody's got to try this. Somebody has got to put cum in a microwave and let us know what happens. Welcome to the SoxCast episode 185, the podcast that's guaranteed to make you cum. How's it going, everybody? Welcome. We endorse putting cum in a microwave if that's what you want to do and you want to get back to us.
We're not liable.
We're not liable for anything here. No. Like, I don't know if there's anything crazy in that stuff that could, like, make your microwave blow up or cause any kind of...
I legally endorse putting your cum in a microwave, and I can be held responsible if it goes badly for you.
All right. Well, we're going to have... We got that... That's legally binding.
Does it explode like eggs? What if it explodes like eggs?
You know, like, it's not just eggs that can explode in a microwave. I microwaved a soup earlier in the week, and when I pulled it out, that shit bubbled and caught me right in the face. It did not feel great. That was a very not great feeling that I'm pretty sure I've still got, like, a little bit of a welt from. That was scalding hot. And I was just like, man, I should probably be glad that wasn't an egg.
Yeah, no, the eggs, it'll fuck you up. Like, that's why they say don't poach eggs in a microwave.
No,
because the water will get really, really hot, but it can't. If it's not disturbed, then it can't release the. It can't start boiling.
Yeah.
So then anytime it disturbs it, a bunch just precipitates out at once.
It just explodes. It's very violent. It's awful. It's like, don't do that.
People have gotten bad burn from it.
Yep.
There's an Ann Reardon episode about it.
It's like, I'm like, just the bit of soup I got in my face was bad enough because it was just like, you know, that really hurts.
Was that the Dinty Moore beef stew?
Yes, it was.
That shit explodes. You put that shit in the microwave.
It sounds like a war zone in there.
No. Yeah, I have to cover it, and then after like half a minute, I'll like stick in. After like half the time, because I do it for like 2.5 minutes, I'll like put in a spoon. I'll close the door.
I just my hand in there. I'll kind of stir it under the plate I have on.
Oh, you're breaking up.
You switched microphones or something.
Uh-oh.
There you are. You're back.
All right, I'm back. I think I just backed away from the mic for a second. All right, I'm here.
Okay.
But yeah, that's Dinty Moore will fuck you up.
Yeah, for like, sure. That shit's
better,
a killer.
Do that on the stove.
I didn't this time because it was literally like, I'm on lunch. I've got 15 minutes.
I just gotta
go. Like, let's just throw this in here. 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Pull that sumbitch out, and I almost lose an eye. So thanks, Dinty Moore. I don't want that. I don't want that fucking sponsorship.
We're just burning sponsors left.
We're
and
just
right
burning
today.
Them left. Look, Moon Pie said fuck me years ago. I'm saying fuck Moon Pie, fuck Dinty Moore, and anybody else that would not give us the shot. I spent a year shouting them out, giving them primo advertisement, and what did we get out of it? Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
It's tragic.
Nothing. Eat turds, Moon Pie.
Eat turds, colon, Moon Pie.
To my immediate virtual
well, they
right.
They look like turds.
Move over, dipshits. He's here to melt some pussy. It's Rhett.
Hello.
How's it going, Mr. Melter?
There's that
melting anime backlog.
Oh, that's what I heard. That's what I heard. I heard there's a big anime backlog coming.
I heard this was a video game podcast, and I said, no thanks.
No thank you. Do not need those. Video games are stupid. But we're here to talk about them regardless. I'm sure at least one or two of them will come up. But, man, yeah, when we get the Rhett segment, all hope is gone.
That's true.
All hope is gone.
That's just kind of the general vibe, though.
Kinda. I didn't want to be the one to say it. I look, I've known Rhett since 2001. I didn't want to be the bad guy here. You know, so we let John take that role sometimes. To my immediate virtual left, never imitated, often implicated, it's John.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
I bet you are. Life is just treating you wonderfully. Nothing ever goes wrong for you. Some of us may quietly resent you for it. That wouldn't be me, though. That wouldn't be me.
No, never.
So what the fuck have you been doing, John? Tell us, everybody, about your wonderful fucking life.
I got back from Japan. We had a two-week trip.
Uh-huh.
It's really fun.
I bet it was. It looked like it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe John went to Japan before me, honestly.
It's honestly shocking.
But yeah, it was our honeymoon, me and Zelaz, and we planning it for 6 months and planning it pretty casually. I think next time we'll I'll be a little more diligent ahead of time about like hotels and activities and whatnot. But we mostly played it by ear. Landed in Tokyo, spent a good like 5 days there, spent 3 days around Mount Fuji, and then spent the rest of it back in Tokyo. Spent a bunch of time around Kabuchiko. We stayed right by there, so we got to spend a bunch of time near the red light in the red light district.
Kabuki.
In the back third of the trip. But saw a bunch of tourist stuff, cruised on the Tokyo River, had a bunch of good meals, had a Wagyu dinner.
Oh, there you go.
And you would be very, very jealous of Polly.
Yep. That's the good shit. Oh my God. It literally is just multiple orgasms in your mouth. It literally is.
It's crazy. Cecile got to practice her Japanese a bunch. I sprained my ankle halfway through the trip.
Oh, and then you got to experience Japanese medical care.
Yeah,
I got to experience Japanese medical care. From the moment I sprained my ankle to the doctor telling me that the x-ray had come back and it was not fractured or broken, because it hurt real bad. I really thought there was a risk of it being broken. But it was not. It was 90 minutes.
Oh my God, that's lovely.
Finding out where the doctor is, commuting there, waiting, getting the x-ray, getting the interview with the doctor, 90 minutes.
That's
and
lovely.
The bill was uninsured. The bill was $40.
Oh my God.
Fucking what the fuck?
It is a civilized country.
Yeah, an actual country. With civilized systems that actually seem to be there to help people. What's that about? That's weird. Imagine the systems in place that are visitors. There to care for you, actually working to care for you.
Mm-hmm. So that was quite nice. But yeah, we saw Mount Fuji. We didn't get to see climate. It wasn't the season for that.
Mm-hmm.
Next trip, we might try to time that. Got to make a promise in front of Tokyo Tower. Got to find the playground from Revue Starlight Red.
Oh my God. Wait, is there a specific playground?
Yes, there's a specific playground they make the promise at. And it is not like an obvious spot. We found a Reddit post of somebody commenting about finding it and then like tracked it down.
You did your little anime pilgrimage.
We did our little anime pilgrimage and had a romantic moment in front of Tokyo Tower.
I'm curious, what is the season for climbing Fuji?
I think summer. Like, fully, like...
So it's, like, too cold.
Like, full in bloom summer.
August.
Yeah, July, August. Like, the middle of dog shit summer, basically.
Yep. Most of the places we stayed at were gorgeous. We had a nice honeymoon suite around Mount Fuji. And with a private onsen. I got to do the communal onsen, the first, like, hotel we were at. So I was just, I went in alone and was like, so I just get naked? And I was naked. And then another guy came in naked. And I was like, okay, it's okay. We're normal. This is normal.
Naked is the new normal.
Imagine a guy coming in with a swimsuit and being like, what the fuck? Nani?
This guy Gene done fucked up the whole vibe.
Oh, no. No, it was fine. But yeah, it was magical. We had a very good time, and we bought like an adult human's worth of weight's worth of old computer games and laser discs and vinyls.
That's what I would do. That would be, but that would be my entire luggage coming back. I would literally just be leaving my clothes, and all of my luggage would be stuffed full of all the wonderful things that I want.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, we went to all the cool, all the retro tech stores that Cecile had been wanting to go to her whole life. We got to go and find like Dragon Slayer on PC 90, Dragon Slayer Legend of Heroes on PC 98, Sorcerian.
There you go.
Yeah, we got Wanderers of East. There's a bunch of Falcom, some Allosoft. We got a whole suite of good shit. Princess Maker. And then a ton of like Famicom and Super Famicom stuff. Like I have every Saga through Saga Frontier now. Nice. And every Dragon Quest through 9.
Oh my God.
I'm very pleased.
I'd heard those shops have been kind of cleared out by, you know, travelers over the years, but you guys are going so deep on the obscure niche nerd stuff. Sounds like it was still okay.
Yeah, like Dragon Quest.
Well, yeah. The obscure niche nerd stuff, like
Dragon Quest. Okay, I know when you were talking about, like, PC Falcom. 98, yeah, PC 98. Falcom, and
you know, Alice obscure, stuff. Weird Aerogay that, you know, like, those aren't going to be the things that these weirdo collectors are going to go clear out.
Yes, and then Dragon Quest is mainstream in Japan. I get it.
Yeah, like you're never going to have a problem finding Dragon Quest anything. There will never be a shortage of Dragon Quest anything in Japan.
Yeah, my only goal was like I just wanted to grab every Saga thing I could find. But then Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy kept popping up so much and for so cheap, and we just kept grabbing them. And then by the end, we had like everything. So, but then we got a bunch
of... The fun thing about Dragon Quest, copies of Dragon Quest 3 is that somebody probably got beat up getting that copy that you own. So that's like, it's got fun memories behind it. Because that was a thing, is a bunch of people got fucking mugged for their copies of Dragon Quest 3 back in the day. And like, I
get it. Have you played Dragon Quest 3?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. That's probably my favorite Famicom RPG. But yeah, that was all a blast. And again, I mean, got a bunch of other stuff like the Dojin, like they just have whole stores full of Dojins, full of Dojin comics and Gojin stories and whatnot. They had like a shelf. There's one place that had like three shelves full of like Marvel fan art, novels.
Oh my God.
That like shipping Thor and Loki. In Japanese, I was like,
"It's everywhere! It's everywhere!
Everywhere is the same. Everywhere we're all." So, but being able to just go to stores and see like fan works, like that, made me really happy. Got a bunch of figures, got a bunch of other stuff. It was a very shopping heavy trip. I think next time I'll probably want to plan more. Like activities,
actual activity, sightseeing stuff.
We still did a lot. Really, we did a lot of unstructured sightseeing where we walked around Tokyo. Mm-hmm. So we got to see like a bunch of, because Cecile's not that interested in, is less interested in the tourist stuff than me. Mm-hmm. I kind of pushed to get like some, like very, like okay, we're going to the Imperial Gardens and we're going down the river and we're doing this, this, and this. And then she was like, let's walk around Shinjuku for an hour and grab stuff at the vending machine and just see what lived in Tokyo looks like. So I feel like we got a really nice balance across the course of the trip. So I was really pleased. The trip back was a little stressful because I only put in a 2-hour connection. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be plenty, but we had to do customs at the connection, and then it sent us fully out of the airport and then back in. So by the time we were running to get to the plane, but it all worked out. Everything worked out. And we got home and we filled in the empty suitcase we checked on the way there. And we filled in the two other suitcases we bought in Japan and got those home. Ugh. And everything got home safe and life is good.
Nice.
I would be so worried about customs finding like the Dojins. being like, what the fuck is this?
They've seen everything at this point.
But I've seen some nasty stories online of people getting their shit like opened up and destroyed.
Yeah, no, I was anxious the whole trip back, right? Okay. And we did get a lot of actual like smut. Like the novelty of just finding like really gnarly smut in a store and bringing it back. I was like, oh God,
you got to do that. You got to do it once in your life.
You gotta. So it was a really good time. There's a bunch of, I feel like it made Japan like much more concrete in our heads. Mm-hmm. It's a real place now. People, we've figured out the public transit.
It's like real anime. You finally experienced real anime.
Refuge Starlight is based on a true story.
Yep. So that was fun. And then Red pointed out I was playing Baldur's Gate 2 for like as my chill out game, like calling me a contrarian for going to Japan and then playing a Western RPG. Mm-hmm.
You got to take a little piece of home with you so you don't get homesick, right?
And then I got back here and I immediately stopped playing Baldur's Gate and started playing Dragon Warrior.
That's good. That's perfect.
Well, I was in a mood. Mm-hmm. Everyone was playing it. I had seen all the cool Dragon Quest stuff. I was like, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready to actually play Famicom RPGs on Famicom. And I had a good time. Well, I played the NES version, which is actually meaningfully different with Dragon Quest, but... So that was fun. As far as like media stuff, I feel like that's the main event here. Mm-hmm. I finished So I'm a Spider, So What last month.
Oh, right. And
I wanted to bring that up for Rhett's benefit because I had a good time. Mm-hmm. And because he's sitting on my copies.
All right.
And not reading them. Mm-hmm. It's fine. I guess I just thought that Rhett was like a fan of.
Sure.
Spider Isekai. I thought he liked it.
Rhett likes Spider Isekai. Rhett does not like reading.
Yeah, there it is.
Doesn't sound like he likes it that much, though. Mm. Not enough to push through. So, you know, that's okay, Rhett.
Fine.
I thought it was quite lovely. I think the ending was very... I think the whole conclusion was nice. I think it's a little bit scattered, just in the sense of, like... This is true probably for the anime too, but it starts off with kind of jumping around the chronology a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like the whole story doesn't kind of get to a point where everyone is in the same time period doing, and the story is just moving forward linearly until like the last quarter or something. So it takes a while to get to that point. And I was a little worn down by that. I also thought the ending was a little bit light. It felt a little bit fluffier than I wanted it to be. But the journey of it was a blast, and the characters are really, really fun. The rules are really fun. It was a very, as far as reading a light novel series, that's like an actual fantasy, trying to be an actual fantasy epic. This hit me way harder than like Konosuba, obviously. That was a good time. And I played a bunch of Metroid ROM hacks. I got into the randomizer. And I played through two different randomizer seeds and had fun. I think both of you would have a lot of fun doing the randomizer on the basic settings. It's just
I've always had a deep interest in trying a Super Metroid ROM or a randomized Super Metroid run, just because I know that game, so it's not hard for me to get around. It's just, oh, okay. What if we just put all the items everywhere?
Yeah, I hadn't replayed it in ages, so I was a little worried, but the default settings are like gentle enough that it's very comfy and
to make seeds that aren't like, you need to mockball through here.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
God,
all
Rhett,
that stuff is really taken care of these days in terms of like, you know, if you want to go full sicko mode with all of those tricks, like you can enable that. But like, there's logic now that where it's just like, if you don't want to try to like do mock ball shit, it not be required.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Just look at the options that I linked. It's maprando.com, but literally like skill assumptions. Basic, medium, hard, very hard, expert, expert plus, extreme, extreme plus, insane, insane plus.
Oh, God.
Like, because there's so much weird shit in Super Metroid.
Yeah.
So, do you want to... should the logic account for doing heated rooms without immunity, without various suit. Should the logic account for being able to wall jump? Can the logic account for X, Y, and Z? So that's like the basic tech. And you can even turn that off if you want. And then it's like, can you do Meridia without gravity suit? Can
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the QOL menu and there's like 800 fucking options in here.
There's a billion options. Can you climb a wall with three or more consecutive wall jumps without a mistake?
Yeah,
yes, yeah. I can do that. Can you infinite bomb jump? Yes, I can do that. Can you bomb jump horizontally?
You can even adjust the number of fucking missile doors and super missile doors. You can really...
It's like, insane. Yeah,
like, there's so much stuff here. And your start location.
No, it's great. It's... this is the one... So there's the original randomizer that... only just move the items around and maybe the bosses. This one actually changes how all the map... all the rooms are linked together. So this is the one that's a lot more crazy, basically.
Yeah.
So I quite liked it. You can even play each other's seeds. Cause like I can link you what my map looked like. Like here, I can actually do that. Boop, 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 boop. View interactive spoiler map. And I'll just link you this. This is the map to my seed because it tracks all that in just the URL.
Oh, that's crazy.
And then you just click final map and it shows everything.
Yeah. But we're getting really close to roguelike here.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Rhett. Correct.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's pretty cool.
So I was very impressed. I played a couple other actual ROM hacks after that. I thought the first one, Super Metroid Ascent, was pretty good. It started off kind of like, oh, this is just sort of a Metroidvania. And then it got like just janky enough to be like, okay, this has some like ROM hack flavor to it that's making it more interesting to me. And then the second one I played was Temple of the Winds, and it was just so unpleasantly janky that I did not have fun with it. So that was the porridge that was too hot. Speaking of roguelikes, Rhett, I did finish Dicey Dungeons.
There you go.
So I have
roguelike with an end.
I finished a roguelike. I mean, most of them have endings. Like the original Rogue, you get to 25th floor and then make your way back up after getting the Amulet of Yendor.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Rogue has nothing to do with that genre now, where it's all grind, you know, grind stats forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not Dicey Dungeons.
Progression between runs.
So Dicey Dungeons handles continuous progression the same way Cave Noir does. Where there's a bunch of individual levels where that start off like get, you know, three floors deep in Cave Noir and then get back out, kill three monsters and get back out. And then it escalates over the course of the levels until you're doing like a 15-minute, 20-minute run that's really intense. Dicey Dungeons is sort of like that, where you have each individual level is completely atomic. There's no skills carried over. You're not doing any kind of stat grinding or any bullshit. But you get that sense of progression because you keep beating these levels and checking off more of the chapters on the menu. For me, that's a very nice compromise where it's not just like I'm beating my head against one challenge over and over while still having the roguelike vibe of I am grinding this one challenge. I'm not trying to level up so that I can have three times as much HP and then bulldoze through it. So I really liked Dicey Dungeons.
Yeah, I thought it's got a great structure. The writing is very charming.
The rules are great. The different characters are great. The witch is hard. The witch is the one that, like, the first beating just the first witch one. I cleared like half the other chapters before I did that, and then the witch was the very last one I finished as well. It was just like I could not wrap my head around her for so long. And then it has a cute finale. So I've now once again completed every commercial Terry Kavanaugh game, and that feels good.
There you go.
Nice.
So that's about it. I'm Dragon Warrioring. I'm having a good time. I've jumped around a lot between the last month and a half.
How's Invictus going?
Apparently the Super Nintendo is on the fritz. So Cecile's going to try to rewire one of the connectors on it. And
wait, you were playing that on a console?
Yes, that's why it's play. That's I've switched to console some time ago, because then you get the way reduced input lag playing on a CRT.
Yeah.
Like, it is, I don't want to go back. I want to keep playing Mario World ROM hacks on a CRT. There isn't anything else really where I feel conscious of input lag to that extent.
I get it with that, those games.
Yeah, I've like seen. With that, like, there's a that level shit. Of precision, especially if you're going to be playing something like Invictus.
Yeah. But literally, if our Super Nintendo dies when I have three levels left, that is my next thing I want to focus on this weekend, is getting back on Invictus. Mm. But if our Super Nintendo dies, I'm going to the used game store and buying another Super Nintendo. This is mandatory.
This is an emergency. I need an emergency Super Nintendo.
I mean, we need one, period, obviously.
Yes.
But I can't. That would suck so bad.
Yeah, that would.
I wonder how much cheaper Super Famicons are in Japan.
Oh, God. But yeah, I jumped around a lot because I've been kind of scattered. Mm-hmm. I joked to Rhett that I kind of put myself in an anti-media zero hole where I had like five big games going. Now I've reduced it down to three. I want to finish Invictus, Dragon Warrior 2, and Baldur's Gate 2.
There you go. It's not bad.
And I'm close to the end of Invictus. So Dicey Dungeons felt insurmountable. And then in the last like 5 days, I cleared half the chapters.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, really the last good. Few days seemed pretty fruitful for that game. Mm.
So that went from being... Honestly, maybe the scariest individual wall was, how can really? I actually beat Dicey? Can I actually beat these fucking rogue challenges? Because the witch was so hard, Rhett.
I really thought Invictus was the wall. I mean, maybe it will be eventually.
I mean, I'm sure it's going to be.
Invictus is scary because I'm on the last three stages. But honestly, it's been very nice so far.
And then it hit the part where it's the Sans music plays.
Yeah, and then I didn't put much time into that yet. I don't know if it's actually going to be that hard. But where I'll send you a screenshot. But so far, every level, really, what counts for me as hard playing Kaizo or like or like Celeste or whatnot is when one checkpoint takes me over 2 hours, and I've been timing it. And almost every checkpoint, aside from like one near the start, I've cleared in like a pretty reasonable amount of time, like generally under an hour, some like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Is that different? Oh,
back on the mic, back on the mic.
I was playing.
There you go.
There we go. It's not that different from like Akugari and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I feel like my training paid off and I was prepared for Invictus, but I'm just really scared of Kamek at the end. I'm really scared of Kamek. It's a 90-second fight. All the other checkpoints are like 30 to 40 seconds max, but Kamek is a 90-second checkpoint fight, and I know that there's another long checkpoint in the finale. I don't remember the specifics. I haven't rewatched any of the GDC runs or anything, but I am very scared of the Invictus finale. So I've got some time off coming up
because of some life changes,
and I'm gonna enjoy drilling it down on those levels.
Nice.
Boy, that was a lot of media babbling. I am done.
All right. Pass Rhett. The baton.
We're going to me?
Yeah. What have you been up to, Rhett? Oh,
anime.
Let's go. Let's fucking welcome go. Welcome okay, to so Anime Palooza, everybody's favorite part of the podcast.
So, yeah, last time, over a month ago, I think, I finished Zelda Echoes of Wisdom and was like, okay, I'm just not feeling any games right now.
And now Zelda, you're saying you played Zelda and was like, I don't like video games.
No, right now. It was not that game's fault. It was just nothing in the backlog was speaking to me. Because, and I can say it wasn't Zelda's fault, because the next game to finally be like, hey, has been Mina the Hollower, which is Zelda-like.
Mm-hmm.
But for about a month and a half, I only watched anime. And I'm not even sure how to... It's about half the anime I've watched in the whole year so far. Like, there were 20 items before and 20 items after.
Oh, my God.
Oof. So I'm not going to talk about every single one, but... A funny thing happened by accident is where I watched three shows in a row that had some level of Hololive involvement. So last time I talked about Demon Lord 2099, for some reason a VTuber appears in the background there. That's how they decided to sell it as the future. There's just VTubers, actual real ones, on billboards. And then I watched Gnosia, which Kobo from Hololive does the opening song for that.
Oh, okay.
And, like, it doesn't stick out at all. It's like, oh, she's really good. Like, it fits the vibe of what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, this time I watched Gachi Akuta. And right when I was picking it, I had this thought of, like, oh, yeah, I think Mori likes that show. And then I go, oh, goddammit, is this three in a row? Because Mori Calliope, Polly's favorite, does the second opening theme song. And then I remember very vaguely hearing about a surprise that happens in the middle of this show. And that is that during one of the fights between two female characters, there's also a Mori Calliope insert song. I was fucking dying, cracking up, laughing, like, oh man, she is fully in this anime now. Like, she was a fan of the manga, and then they just put her all over the anime.
Oh, that's cute.
So this is a shonen fighting show. It's got some really interesting world building that kind of goes nowhere after episode 4, because it becomes a lot of fights. The second half of the show does not deserve to go as hard as it does, but I had a good time because it's a lot of fights, like just one big, like, 12 episode brawl, basically, that just evolving fights, like how things are going, very reminding me of, like, the good parts of My Hero Academia. So I am interested. I think there's going to be a second season, so I'm very interested in where that one goes. Next up, Call of the Night season 2. I watched like 10 episodes of what in one night of this.
Oh, damn. Shit. I've got the first season on my to watch list. Yeah.
So I thought the first season was okay. It's kind of slow building, and I felt like it kind of ended right before things were about to pop off, and then season 2 kind of immediately pops off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, here's like the actual story arcs that you may have been feeling this season 1 didn't have.
Mm.
So, yeah, I really recommend that season, that show now. I watched Lupin the Third, 1972, the original. That one's kind of rough. The first few episodes are, I mean, it kind of got there. It's very interesting seeing the very beginning of that series and them finding their footing. The first few episodes are weird, though, where it's like they hadn't quite found the tone, because one of the episodes is like, a guy invents a potion that makes him bulletproof. Like, and then there's one episode later where there's just a villain that actually has time travel. And I'm just like, what? Like, usually Lupin doesn't go supernaturals from what I've seen of, like, basically all the modern stuff. So seeing the originals being, like, way more out there with some of its plots was interesting.
Mm.
But, like, by the end, it was like, okay, this is kind of the Lupin I remember. And then there's part 2, which is 155 episodes, and it does not have a continuous plot, so I am skipping that one. That's like the main series that people remember from the 80s.
Yeah.
And then I got back to Fire Force, which finally aired season 3, part 2.
Another one of these.
Great.
So Fire Force is from the author of Soul Eater.
Yeah.
That was always the big hook that kind of got people in the door. And I've never really heard people talk about it beyond that.
Mm.
So I really liked season 1, and then season 2 was kind of, I wasn't sure what was going on. Season 3, it's been like 5 years, and it was kind of hard to jump, because I think the previous seasons were like 2019 and 2020,
mm-hmm.
and then season 3 was like 2025. I'm like, guys, it's been a bit. I don't really remember what was happening. I try to watch, like, recap videos, and it doesn't really help. And I'm just like, I don't really remember what the villains were doing or trying to accomplish. And then season 3 itself is also kind of not great.
Mm.
A lot of it is one fight that's really slow. And, like, not a whole lot happens. And there's just a couple really, really stupid, like, setups. Where, like, a character is doing muscle flexes to prevent dying.
All right.
There's no way to really explain it. It's just like, and he's doing it for like an hour, like multiple episodes.
He's giving it in the background. He's giving himself compressions.
It's so stupid. So season three is not great, and like that's not a great way to pick up a show in the middle.
How does it compare to the eternal 10 seconds from the middle of Chimera Ant?
Not good, I would say.
No, not as good.
Chimera Ant's peak, obviously. Is the goat.
Yeah.
So season three is not great, but then the very last episode kind of goes nuts, and you're just like, wait, what is happening in this series? Because, like, I started thinking of End of Evangelion, of all things, and I won't say why, but it's like, oh, that last sequence went really crazy, huh? So then they did season three, part two, and it's like a completely different show now. It just firing on all cylinders. Let's wrap this series up with a huge bang, reminding me of like Simple Gear XV, where it's just like all these fights are going to wrap up in one episode. We're just bang, 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 just nonstop good shit. And then I can't believe I got spoiled, very vaguely spoiled on where the series ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm annoyed by that. But then when you realize where it's going, you're just like, ha, what? So I really recommend that series now in a weird way. I think it's worth checking out. Season three, part two was so good. They really... That's such a weird show. It's about firefighters, yeah. And then it becomes about firefighters who can fly at the speed of light, mm-hmm. or stop time. Mm-hmm. It just, the powers get wacky. Next up, I watched Beastars final season.
Uh-huh.
This was another show that started in 2019.
And yeah, this is another long and then, running.
And then season final part was 2026. So seasons one and two were really good. I don't know how to talk about this one. I'd always heard that people didn't really like how that series ended. And I wasn't sure what that meant, where it was like, it was just the last arc is bad. Is the whole second half bad? Is the last chapter bad? And it's kind of complicated. I thought the names of these are so bad. There's final season part one and final season part two. And they were aired like almost over a year apart. Final season part one is really good.
Wait, what show is this again?
Beastars.
Beastars, okay.
They're building tension. They've got a new antagonist. There's a lot of mystery and like drama going on. And then final season part two like loses that drama at the start so immediately. I'm just like, what the hell happened?
Weird.
And but then, so you start getting closer to what people really didn't like about the manga ending, and they decided, hey, let's change some stuff for the finale. And then let's also really, really rush some stuff.
Oh.
So I saw something crazy where Fire Force Season 3 Part 2 adapted like 88 chapters into 12 episodes, and people thought that was insane, but they actually pulled off. Beastars' final episode by itself is like 18 chapters of the manga smashed into 23 minutes. It's completely ridiculous. They just blitz through the end of that series at like a pace I've never seen before.
Crazy.
And they also change a bunch of stuff. So
Beastars was the one where they did not like the ending, where people
didn't like the ending originally, and now I'm like reading the manga version going, no, I still think this is better than what the anime did. I don't know.
Wow. Gotcha.
It's so weird where it's just like trying to figure out how they could reconcile. Obviously, they just needed another episode to, you know, have a little more time and not put like the epilogue in like the epilogue happens at like the same time as the credits. And there's a new plot line that seems to only be in the anime of, like, characters setting up a play. Like, oh, we're going to do a play about carnivores and carnivores and herbivores. And, like, that plot thread just fucking ends with, like, a one-screen montage during the end credits. It's just like, you built that up.
That's real satisfying.
Over, like, That's you built that up over like 8 episodes and then throw it out.
Just pay it off. Like there you go, seconds. Man.
I couldn't believe. I thought that was going to be the climax of the show, and it just gets tossed aside.
Yuck.
There's the manga version has like a cool car chase that doesn't happen in the anime. There's a press conference that happens in both both the manga and the anime, but the reason for it is completely different. Because in one version, it's like, oh, a character died. And in the other one, it's like, we're holding the Olympics in town. And I'm just like, that's a really, really different reason to hold a press
conference. That is a hard shift.
Because they just needed the scene where a character was on TV and made an announcement.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is totally different. It's so weird.
So strange.
So it's like you had a show where people didn't like the ending and then you meddled with it. Also, the way they resolve the villain in the anime is crazy. Like, it's so much worse than just having Legoshi win a fight.
Red, I really hope the Kaguya-sama movie's good.
Oh, God. I think, isn't that one where they really just kind of yada, yada, yada and skip to the ending?
That's what I suspect is going to happen. Which, you know, not the worst idea.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's out, right? I think I've seen pretty positive impressions of it.
Oh, good. I didn't know it was actually out.
I'm not sure how. Maybe there's two different things we're thinking of.
There's like the
Road to Adulthood.
The Road to Adulthood. I think that one's already out.
Was there going to be another one?
Well, the Road to Adulthood is just the lead up to them having sex for the first time.
Oh, the final chapters of Kaguya-sama as a completely new theatrical movie based on an original story written by the original creator, not yet aired. Okay, yeah, there's a lot of stuff after the sex, so...
Yeah.
Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to go a different route with that movie, though. Yeah,
just say anime original.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be an original ending.
I'm good with that, yeah.
Interesting.
I like the ending plenty, but it was very, like, kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I don't know.
John wanted more characters to die. That's just how
it goes. It's not even... You know... I'm interested in them going in a different direction. I think that could be wise.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will say one thing about Beastars before we move on to the next one. This is a CG animated show from
Orange?
Studio Orange.
Yeah, it's Studio Orange.
There's something about this show, even though it's a bunch of animal characters, they feel so much more human than everything else because they get to be animated all the time, because the voice acting is a lot more subdued and low-key. Like, it's so funny just watching all these shows about human characters, and they're very pumped up and anime and over the top, and then the show about animals feels more human and down to earth.
Mm.
But man, it's so hard to recommend now because they fell on their face.
Botched it so bad at the end.
Episode, even if it was 2 episodes, I would have probably been better.
Botched that shit at the 2-yard line.
Just insane. 18 chapters. I was reading it like in disbelief of like, granted, like 12 of those chapters are like either scenes that were entirely cut or a fight,
mm-hmm.
but it was still like 18 chapters. That would have been 18 episodes in One Piece.
Yeah.
That would have been a whole season. That would have
been a whole fucking season.
I will zip through some shows. I watched Zom 100 Bucket List of the Dead. This is a zombie show that's not really about zombies. It is about a guy who's been working in a really shitty exploitative company. So when the zombie outbreak happens, he is only happy that he doesn't have to go to work anymore.
I like that.
It is so joyous. He is so happy. He's just like, oh my God, I get time off now. I'm going to drink beer and watch TV. But this is a show about just living your life and, you know, doing what you can.
Man, that would be me. That would be me.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I watched Aim for the Ace, which is a 1973 tennis show.
Yeah, this is a tennis show.
Oh, God. What's his name? I think the director's name was Dezaki. I've watched a lot of his stuff from the 70s and on where... Mm. Tomorrow's Joe and Rose of Versailles are kind of the big ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This one was kind of a miss. I kind of get why I skipped it originally. The animation isn't really good enough to portray tennis, which is a very fast show or a very fast, very fast sports. Mm-hmm. The last episode, I will say, is completely beautiful. Like, that's the real highlight here. Also, this is one of the first shows where I can see them falling, anime falling into the trap that did for the next, like, 50 years of they ran out of manga material and just kind of winged it for the last half.
Oh, good.
The anime original spinoff, it started really early, mm-hmm. where, like, I think I saw, like, episode 15 is where it diverges, and then right around that point is they get introduced to a new character whose tennis serve makes a corkscrew, and you go, huh, this show is pretty realistic up until that point, and now you're introducing, like, powers. and then I watched Aim for the Ace, another match, which was 1988. It was 15 years later that they finally made a continuation. And it has that 80s OVA budget now. It is gorgeous. And they found a way, because there's a 3-year time skip, to kind of smooth over the transition and, like, all that anime original stuff, you can kind of just forget about it because nothing really happened. So this continues the story of the manga smoothly, but also maybe also still a bit of a miss story-wise. But the 80s are kind of like the big missing spot for me, where it's like there's not a real lot of long series from that point. It's a lot of OVA stuff. But man, it looks so good.
It looks also, so good.
Also, the frame rate on the tennis is like 2 or 3 times higher now. It's it looks much better.
They showed Angel. They just showed Angel's Egg in theaters here. I missed it.
Yeah.
I found out.
I mean, that's a show without a movie with not a lot of animation in it.
Oh, okay.
That thing is slow. There's like 10 words of dialogue in the entire thing or something.
Fuck, that's funny.
And finally, I guess I'll wrap up with, I watched Dan to Dan.
Oh, yep.
Oh, people have been talking a lot about this one. This was a big one.
This is the big one. This is Science Saru of... what else have they done? You know... Oh god!
I know who you're talking about. It's not at the tip of my tongue right now. I know who it is.
Devilman Crybaby. Oh, Isaken.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing a shonen fighting show, and I didn't think they had them in them, but they do. Yeah. This is just a very weird, inventive show. It's got their animation style with more detailed characters, designs, and plot. Like, the show is really fun. There's a lot of fighting. There's a lot of inventive fighting and, like, use of colors or even lack of colors. Like, episode 2 has a sequence that's, like, entirely in grayscale. And you just kind of get used to it. So when they finally win the fight and it breaks out into color and you're just like, oh, my God, like, your eyes adjusting like you've been in the dark. It's crazy. Like, it's a really gorgeous show. But the main thing, the takeaway, is that there is one episode in season one that they start doing a sequence and you're like, oh no, is this going to make me cry? And it's a character flashback and you think, oh, this is going to go badly. And then it goes so much worse than you think. Yes. And then they have the resolution to that plot in the current timeline. And this was the hardest I've cried at a piece of media in this year so far.
Which is saying something for you. You seek out tier media.
But for it to happen in a, you know, big anime fighting show out of fucking nowhere, they had like 15 minutes to set this up and they did it. Like, I couldn't watch the next episode after I was done this because I was crying so fucking hard. Like, both nostrils completely clogged up. Like,
oh my God.
Having a little difficulty. This was the release I've been looking for a bit. Like, just
that's good.
Having a little difficulty breathing because I had to breathe through my mouth because the nose was 100% blocked. I'm like, and it just completely fucking took me out of nowhere. I'm just like, what the hell just happened? This was like the fun, goofy show about psychic powers and demons and, you know, ghosts and yokai. I'm not thinking I'm going to be like crying for an hour afterwards. Oh my God. So yeah, I will say, though, there's two seasons right now. I'm really glad I waited till the second one is out, because season one just ends in the middle of an arc. There is no attempt at, like, satisfying ending point. I think season two ends at a much more logical point, luckily.
That makes sense.
But yeah, there is a third season confirmed. So, season two is really good for the action stuff. There isn't a moment that makes you cry for an hour. And then finally, I've been getting into Dr. Stone, which is another 2019 show that is finally wrapping up in 2026. But it's like 100 episodes, so I'm not done.
Oh my God, the Dr. Stone journey.
The Dr. Stone journey is me literally dropping season one originally after one episode pissed me off so much. But then I'm like, when did I watch this in 2020? I might have not been in the best mood back then for reasons.
We were having some trouble.
There might have been a reason or two. You may have been feeling a certain way.
But it's also possible I watched it in 2019 and was just being a grump. I honestly don't remember. But it was funny because I thought I had finished season one. And then once I hit like the episode 18, I'm like, wait, I don't really remember this part. I thought the space thing is where the season ended. And then by the end, I'm like, oh, I definitely just fucking dropped it and deleted it from my list, huh? I don't know why I ended up going back to it. Just they've been making so many seasons. There are 8 cores of that show now.
Oh my God.
It's a long boy. There is Dr. Stone, Dr. Stone Stone Wars, Dr. Stone New World, and Dr. Stone Science Future, which is like another final season part 2, final season part 3. Like the last part is another 3 cores. So I'm like not even halfway, even though I'm in the third season. That's a big boy. Hopefully it wraps up decently. So that's Rhett's Anime Corner. And under 25 minutes somehow.
Damn.
Skated in.
I appreciate getting the you are our window into a beautiful world that is very important and keeping us up to date.
My takeaway is watch Dandadan.
That's a good takeaway.
But because that's the most popular one, everyone already did. I'm the latecomer there.
Well, me and Polly haven't.
There you go.
this was in the top 200, like for score and popularity on my anime list. Like people know about this one. This one's up there, like next to Haruhi and Nichijou.
Oh wow!
As far as like all time popularity, and it's Nichijou. Way more recent.
Cool.
So, Polly, what have you been up to?
Well, I've actually been up to a lot. It's been a month and a half since we last podcasted, and I ended up getting into finishing a lot of very big things, but I feel like trying to sit here and talk about all of the big things would just kind of bloat me into a 45 and 50 minute segment.
Ever would try to talk about everything that they did.
Right. Nobody would ever do that. I just don't think that I could sum up things like Chaos Child, in a matter of a few minutes and still be able to move on and talk about Zato, I Love the World and Everything in It. Like those are very big visual novels. Like I liked them a lot. I also did I also did a recorded playthrough of Zato, I Love the World and Everything in It. So if you wanted to just kind of experience it that way, that's fine. That's a cool Lane inspired kind of take on a disappearance in the USSR in 1986. It's a very, very cool read. Very weird, very sci-fi, very heady. And it'll make you cry a lot because the main character is very Lane adjacent in that she's kind of the outcast. And boy, people are in this game are real mean to her. Holy crap. Aww. And she's very mean to herself. Never seen a character gaslight themselves as well as this character. She's very good at it. Holy crap. I'll go ahead and just spend, I guess, the entirety of this segment circling back to a game that I talked about in an earlier episode a few months ago. One I was very excited about for a number of years, and I had a lot of very positive thoughts about when we last spoke about it. We're bringing it all the way back around to Labyrinth of Toho Tri, The Dreaming Girls, and The Mysterious Orbs.
Oh, you got some thoughts on this one.
I got thoughts on this one. I've had a lot of time to sit with it. I completed it a couple of weeks ago, and it's kind of just all had time to kind of build up and kind of, you know, finally all fully settle. So so this is like, again, for people that don't know, this is like the 7-year follow-up to one of my favorite dungeon crawlers ever. And long story short, like, this game's amazingly put together. It is a dense, systems-heavy RPG with a lot of customization options, tons of characters, a lot of team composition and menu fiddling, a lot of boss fights that you'll spend time wrapping your head and your builds around. And on top of that, it's got like a really good story, and the presentation is fantastic. So that's kind of like the where we were last time. And for like the first 40 or 50 hours or so, all of that, it's just mostly strengths. Like, I had really not a lot of complaints other than that, just like, this game is really hard for me to play and relax because it's so systems heavy. It's so dense with how you have to play the characters. And then I'd say at around the 60% or so mark, it started to kind of feel like some of these things were either losing their luster or starting to feel cramped and overthought and restrictive and over-designed in ways that started to kind of just make me feel a little exhausted. I think that it starts with the characters themselves. And there are 45 characters. And every character is, you know, they are one or two unique play styles in and of themselves that require you to really get your hands dirty, get into their kits, and like understand how their various forms of stacks and their own personal like resource wells work and how their gimmicks work. And again, 45 characters in a game, and you can have 12 in your party at a time. Ugh. So you keep track of 12 characters who almost all play radically differently. And to keep all of that in your head and keep track of it, especially like when you have to keep, again, you have to keep track of everybody's individual stacks, and then there are skills that have cooldowns, so you've got to remember, oh, is your skill still on cooldown if I switch you back in? Hold on, I don't know how, or like, there are some spell cards that can only be used on turns divisible by 3, so is it like the overall battle turns, or is it how many turns my character has had in this battle? And
it's a lot. Well, that's a lot to keep track of.
It really is. And it's hard to build a static group that you could just like, you know, learn your ins and outs with, because, hey, you know, like, these are my girls. We're going to carry them around and we're going to make the game work. And you could mostly do that in Labyrinth of Toho too, just fine. You can usually make any team composition work if you just play around with it enough. But this game really wants you to be cycling characters in and out a lot. So sometimes dungeon floors or boss fights just kind of mandate that, like, they won't like actively put them in your party for you, but basically it's kind of a mandate that you have these specific characters and these specific elements and these resistances, or you can just go eat a bowl of poop. and that leads to the boss fights, which the boss fights are a huge highlight of this game. It's a huge highlight of this series. Like, that's, and most dungeon crawlers, really, that where, you know, you figure out the dungeon, you get to a really tough boss, and then, hey, you figure that out. And this game has a lot of really amazing boss fights. Like, there are moments where I'd sat there and I'd done my 30 minutes of reconfiguring my party, thinking over my strategy, studying the pattern, and then it pays off in a victory and it feels great. There are a lot of those in this game. I just want that to be clear. There's a lot of good boss fights in this game. That said, there are also a lot of fights that feel like they were tuned in response to how players who spent a lot of time with Labyrinth of Toho 2 were able to find unique and fun ways to just completely blow past boss fights in a single round. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of fights in this game, I feel, that very specific, they're very specifically tuned to keep you from doing that. Like, some fights feel very specifically designed around a certain character being there, or you're just going to have a real bad time if you don't have that character, or some bosses who are weak to certain characters, they've just also been hyper-tuned to shut that character the fuck down immediately. And that just feels bad, especially like when you think you're thinking outside the box and then like the game has just been, oh, you just kind of you just put a gimmick here to block this specific strategy because this specific strategy would work. That doesn't feel good. Like there's especially one that just drove me insane is like there are some bosses that just have a permanent status effect where they have a max number of damage that they can take, and that's annoying because it's just like, well, okay, I have this character that could literally just floor you, and you've literally given this boss that effect, so I can't do that. And I don't like how things feel really handcrafted. Like it kind of feels like the developer wants me to be having a fight against them, and they don't want me to beat their perfect little system or something at times. There's also this really fun, scary gimmick that happens a few times. Like you run into it in the first big the big skill check boss, where the boss will revive after you beat them, and it's very cool, it's fun, and it's scary. And then the game just kind of keeps using it a lot, and it's just like, oh, okay, you're probably gonna do, you know, like you can even look at like the boss pattern, because again, you can surface that, and sometimes it'll just say, oh, something will happen when the boss health hits zero. It's like, okay, all right,
oh,
like
what it's gonna be.
Okay, do the thing so I know what you're gonna do, so I can hammer out this last 15 seconds of the boss fight. Like it just kind of stops feeling special and cool and fun. In a lot of ways, I guess this game's boss fights felt less like I was trying to figure out a tough combat challenge and more like I was trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together that the developer wanted me to use to solve it. And you get even more restriction with stuff like team composition, because there are 8 units in the game. There are 8 characters that are deemed elite units, and you can only have one of them in your party at a time. And so that's 8 characters where you can only have just one of them.
I'm curious which characters the game says are elite.
They're very very powerful characters in the Toho canon. So it makes sense. And the thing is that they're not totally broken or anything. They just join at a slightly higher level, and you level up very fast in this game. So you end up matching them very quickly. And like, and as soon as like, you know, you're there and like you are at the level that they're at, they're able to just be folded like a paper bag, just like any other unit in the game. So the restriction, I think, just comes off. It just another possible way that feels like my expression is being stifled a little bit here. I feel like I'm being hamstrung. And I guess that's sort of where I'm landing, is that to me, a lot of this game design feels like a reaction. And again, it's a reaction to how players who spent a lot of time getting very good at Labyrinth of Toho 2 are able to blow that game's challenges away after a playthrough or two. Like, there's a heavy-handedness to the way some things are put, the way that certain fights are put together, that it's just very clearly, oh, I know that this character would work really well, so I need to do a thing that will shut this character completely down so you can't cheese this fight the way that I think that you would if you had the ability to. It also comes across in how, like, in Labyrinth of Toho 2, you have access to everybody's skill set from the jump. You get access to everything. And in this one, you have skill trees that unlock at like every 30 levels or so. And that's just not as fun. So you have less to play around with, like until you get to like the back third of the game, where most characters will start having access to most of their skill trees. And I guess sort of the reason I think that this game is a reaction, and it is indicative of the developer kind of reacting to the way people played the previous game, is because
The developer actually ripped out nearly all of the dungeon puzzles in the back half of the game the first week the game was out because a vocal minority couldn't handle pushing some blocks or doing some ice sliding puzzles. That's another issue, I think, is that like the dungeon gimmicks, that's literally all there are mostly, is just block puzzles and ice slider puzzles. And it's just like, okay, you didn't really do more than that, did you? And again, he eventually came to his senses and restored those puzzles. But it was such a quick and drastic response that, like, this game spending 7 years in development, a lot of it just feels like he spent 7 years reacting to the way that people kind of were able...
playing Gavin the Toho, too.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it feels like to me. And I know it probably sounds like I'm talking like a gang of shit about this game. But I think this game is very good. I just think that to me, it is a disappointment from the perspective of someone that loved the previous game, the way that you could get in there and get your hands dirty as early, you know, as soon as you get a character, you've got access to their entire skill setup and you can just play around with it however you want. And to me, I think that that's like the fun part of it, is getting in there and messing with your builds and having a lot of fun, but like having your builds hamstrung by either story progression or being locked behind your levels not being high enough to kind of play with the skills in the way that you would want to. It just kind of feels like, I don't know. It's just a disappointment from someone that loved that previous game so much.
Seems completely reasonable to me.
Yeah, and again, I think that this is absolutely a top-tier dungeon crawler. There are a lot of systems in here to get your hands dirty with. There's still a lot of fun to play around with. This game is just a little too systems-y for me. And I don't like how some of the encounters feel like they've like welded on certain, you know, they've welded over certain strategies that require specific builds to surpass. Like, and maybe there's better players out there that can work past those weird limitations and roadblocks than me. Yeah, it's on me if I'm a bad player. I get it. I still think that this is a great game. You know, you're going to enjoy some PNG files throwing math and particle effects at each other and having real hard boss fights and having a real good time cracking it. But I just think that, like, there's something behind the overall... I don't know. Yeah, the ethos behind how this game feels put together, that it doesn't jive with me. I don't love it in the same way that I love Labyrinth of Toho 2. And to me, I guess it's sort of a disappointment. Because, you know, like, really, really wanted to love this game. I loved the first 40 or so hours with it. It's just the more time that I spent with it, the more it sort of felt like, I just feel more hamstrung here than I should be. And I didn't really feel like I was able to start operating in the way that I wanted to play this game until like the last 10 hours or so, which are really good. Like, there's some crazy good final bosses that this game has that had me really scratching my head. But unfortunately, when I finished it, like, it was more of a sigh of relief than it was like, oh, I did it. You know, it just kind of, and that's unfortunate. And it also, I think that disappointment has kind of colored how I feel, because I can't play anything now. I've not been able to pick up and play a new game or find anything to stick at all. And it's like, oh no, it was the disappointment from Labyrinth of Toho try so much that I had to.
Just like Red and Zelda.
Oh yeah, there you go. Now, I guess I just got to go watch anime for the next 3 weeks.
There you go.
I did suggest that.
I mean, this is something you've orbited around a lot, is like, you like hard games. You like games that are demanding and make you think and make you engage closely. You're also very in tune with the ways that games can like be indulgent, can make you feel good, can get like the good brain chemicals flowing, can like the moment where you can kind of, you cut through the resistance and find your path forward, and it explodes in a very pleasing way. Mm-hmm. Like Crimson Clover double break motor.
Oh God. Yeah.
Like you're very in tune with that. And I think there is a kind of design where you're so focused on like closing off paths to succeed too easily.
Yeah.
That it starts to feel kind of unrewarding. It sounded like Silksong kind of danced on that line for you, where you had to replay it to really start vibing
with
it.
Yeah. I think that that's really a good touchstone. Yeah. Like, I had to kind of play Silksong twice to really get where I wanted to be with that game. I don't think I'm going to do that with Labyrinth of Toho Try. I think this game is just a little too long for that. I don't
when
like...
When you say, I loved the first 40 hours, I go, ain't that enough?
Yeah. But I don't necessarily like the system for, like,
no,
unlocking characters and things like that. I just feel that, like, it's a little much for me to want to go through again. Like, I'll leave that for the better players that want to crack that nut.
Kind of sounded like it was a little too exhausting and demanding at all times.
It's too exhausting, too demanding. And again, I think it's just overthought. I think he spent way too much time. This game spent way too long in the oven. I think that this game probably could have had a third of the systems that it had and been way more fun.
Just like it can be fun to, like, you don't always need everything to be just maximum thought all the time. Because that's just like, this is something I've been wrestling with playing like ROM hacks and whatnot, is like, hey, can I just play for a minute?
Right.
Can I just play for like a second, or even playing like old Dragon Quest? It's like, obviously this is grindy and demanding and has puzzles and mazes and whatnot, but also coming off of games that were inspiring at the time, I'm very attuned to all the ways that this is very gentle and accommodating.
Mm hmm.
And like, that stuff's important too. It's not just how do you, it's a balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And I think that this game just kind of misses that a little bit. I think it's, I don't know whether I would call it indulgent or just, I feel like, you know, he absolutely wanted to make his everything game, I think. And he did that. And I think a lot of people love that. You know, the overall opinion is that people love it. And that's fine. You know, it's just not entirely what I wanted from this thing. But I still think it's a very good thing. The time that I spent enjoying it, it was great. Like, you know, again, like, every cool boss fight that I won, that I had to sit there and strategize my way around, even when they were at their hardest and the worst, you know, like, there were moments where it's like, you still got those moments of hype. Like, I still think, like, the last 10 hours of that game has really good boss fights. Just real good. Just sink your teeth in, get comfortable in some menus for a little while. But it just, the overall package in and of itself, it's just a bit disappointing for me, unfortunately. But it's still a very good game. That's really about all I've been into. Like I said, everything. I did finish Final Fantasy Tactics, The Evilest Chronicles as well. That was, hey, it's Final Fantasy Tactics.
I want to replay it. I want to replay that game soon.
Yeah, it's Final Fantasy Tactics. Like, it's a good video game. A little, I don't know. I'm of the opinion, I don't think that game's as much of a strategy game as people make it out to be. I just think it's kind of an RPG that happens to have movement.
I feel like after Labyrinth of Toho 3, every strategy thing is going to feel like baby mode.
time to just chill out with some Matsuno.
Yeah, you
time
go.
To break the systems in fight.
Let's just crunch this in two.
Yeah, that's basically what I did. You know, by the end of chapter two, it's like, okay, I have my endgame party.
Yeah. Well, you had to grind a lot, right? Because it's so hard, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Because that game does have some mean difficulty spikes. Even when you even when you are, like, with your optimal party, that game still got some... Oh, my God, the one that drove me nuts. There's a fight at the start of Chapter 4 where you have to defend an NPC. And I swear, the dumb bitch's AI is way worse than it was on the PlayStation, because this bitch just runs right back. She starts at a point where she needs to be running towards you for help, and she just kept running back toward the enemies. It's like, what are you doing, you dumb bitch? And then she dies in three turns, and I can't do anything about it.
That's funny.
That was about 15 minutes of getting her to cooperate at some point eventually. But yeah, it's kind of like, hey, this is a
a real good version of Final Fantasy Tactics. That's a good video game.
Cool.
But yeah, that's my month and a half.
Cool. Sounds like we had our good catch up thing, good catch up episode, and then next time we'll have the kind of. All right,
more immediacy.
Yeah.
Look, if you're gonna look, would you rather podcast or go to Japan? I mean, come on, yeah. Come on.
Yep.
We could have podcasted from Japan. I mean, me and Rhett would have had to have drastically altered how we. Right, John. We're gonna be up at Rhett. We're gonna be up at 10 in the morning, and John.
I was awake for more of the time that Rhett is awake.
That's
I am here.
We'd be doing the podcast at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m.
And y'all and Rhett would be comfy as a clam.
Yep, that would not be me.
John got to experience the Discord game channel in the after hours.
In the after hours, the twilight hours. All right. Yeah. So with that out of the way, then it looks like we are cruising to the end of another successful episode. I hope you came by the end of it all. I mean, that is kind of that's our guarantee.
And bring it home.
Bring it on home. John, where can the internet folks at home find you?
FarawayTimes.com.
Rhett, where can the folks at home find you?
I guess Rhett.bsky.social.
And you can find me wherever I am. And that's going to do it. We are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love you.